Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. We don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do just need to get on with it because we're already running out of time. Thank you for tuning in to the very last word on Brett Kavanaugh. I said it. This will be the very final last word. I got an email from my other brother, Daryl, who said, Doug, Republicans are raving about their new hero, Senator Susan Collins, because of her great speech in support of Brett Kavanaugh. The same speech where she says he will support Obamacare and abortion. Great again? Really? Great again? Is this the definition? Now, I thought perhaps my other brother Daryl was using some hyperbole, as he is wont to do from time to time. So I had to go and pull the text of the Susan Collins speech, which has been roundly celebrated throughout all conservative circles as one of the greatest feats of statesmanship since Abraham Lincoln spoke. Where did he give his famous speech? Come on, it's a famous speech. How do you draw a blank on Abraham Lincoln's most famous speech? I obviously should have waited and done a little bit of research. 47 years ago, Anyway, that one. The greatest thing. She's the greatest politician since Abraham Lincoln. The greatest feat of politics since Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. The Gettysburg Address. Thank you.
It's so famous.
English isn't even her first language. She remembered the Gettysburg Address before I did. My extremely attractive audio engineer isn't even a U.S. citizen. Have you been studying for the test or something?
No.
It's one of the advantages of homeschooling is that you learn things like that. Anyway, she's the greatest politician since Lincoln, and this speech is the greatest speech since Gettysburg, and any document printed with this speech is greater than the Emancipation Proclamation. Now that's hyperbole, he said. All right, now let's go to the speech from Susan Collins, who, by the way, Susan Collins proves Rush Limbaugh's old axiom that politics is show business for the ugly. That woman is just hard to look at. And you know what? If she wasn't a flaming pro-abort, pro-homosexual, pro-socialist, I wouldn't even notice how hideous she is and how she looks like she could keel over at any moment. So all of you Republicans who are praising Susan Collins, you can never attack Hillary Clinton for being feeble and frail again, because Susan Collins looks like she could drop dead at any moment. So she says in her speech, by the way, she says, quote, noting that Roe versus Wade was decided 45 years ago and reaffirmed 19 years later in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, I asked Judge Kavanaugh whether the passage of time is relevant to following precedent. He said honoring precedent is essential to maintaining public confidence. As to the right to privacy, Griswold versus Connecticut was cited by Mr. Kavanaugh, who said that Griswold established the legal foundation that led to Roe 8 years later. In describing Griswold as settled law, Judge Kavanaugh observed that it was the correct application of several cases not seriously challenged by anyone today. He noted repeatedly that Roe has been upheld by Planned Parenthood versus Casey, describing it as precedent upon precedent. When I asked him, would it be sufficient to overturn a long-established precedent if five current justices believed it was wrongly decided. He emphatically said, no. One concern I frequently heard was that Judge Kavanaugh would be likely to eliminate the Affordable Care Act's vital protections for people with pre-existing conditions. In a dissent in Seventh Sky versus Holder, Judge Kavanaugh rejected a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, preserving the law in full. Unquote. Oh, that was Susan Collins. Ugh. Well, and so no hyperbole on the part of my other brother, Daryl. And now we have conservative leaders falling all over themselves. These are leaders in the conservative fundraising movement, such as Penny Nance, the CEO of Concerned Women for American Babies Over 20 Weeks Old. The other ones we can go ahead and kill. Then we have Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the... We'd have been okay with killing Susan B. Anthony if she was under 20 weeks gestation list. I don't know if this is going to work. Then we have Kristen Hawkins, president of Students for Life Over 20 Weeks Gestation. The others we can support killing. And Father Frank Pavone, national director of Priests for Life. If those lives are over 20 weeks gestation, the others we're willing to sacrifice. Anyway, I'm not going to give all the quotes of all these pathetic pro-life industry fundraising hacks, but I will post a link to it so you can go there and become physically ill as you hear them praising Judge Kavanaugh, who Judge Kavanaugh is a tool of the establishment, and he always has been. And I want to thank Ambrose Evan Pritchard for posting something that I haven't thought about in over 20 years, and nobody has even talked about in over 20 years. But Ambrose Evans Pritchard posted a story about his battle with Brett Kavanaugh all around one of the formative events of my political awakening. Back there was a time when I wasn't really paying attention, and then I started paying attention. And I started thinking about what are the formative events of my political, you know, how I ended up being who I am and where I am and what I am today. And probably the first thing I noticed on the world scene was the United States Marine Corps barracks bombing in Lebanon in 1983. That was one of the first things that kind of woke me up. And I joined the Marine Corps. And then there was the election of Bill Clinton. That was a slap in the face, right? That was a kick to the stomach, right? Shocking. That got my attention and helped me awaken politically. Number three was the death of Vince Foster, because I had grown up being part of the crowd that said, anyone who thinks the John F. Kennedy assassination was anything other than one guy with a rifle, well, you're crazy. Black helicopters, tinfoil hats, all that. But then the death of Vince Foster, I watched the story unfold and I thought, you know, maybe the Kennedy assassination, the conspiracy theory, maybe there could be something to that, because I'm watching a murder being covered up right in front of me, in front of God and everybody, right here on TV, live. I watched it happen. Then the fourth was Oklahoma City bombing. That was definitely an awakening. Probably the biggest seminal event of my political awakening was the O.J. Simpson trial. The acquittal of O.J. Simpson on the murder charges. So there was all that. That's just my secular political awakening, the events. I don't know, sit down and think of your top five, and then, I don't know, you could do a podcast, I suppose. But the murder of Vince Foster is what I want to talk about. Because Brett Kavanaugh was an assistant independent counsel for Ken Starr back when they were investigating Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton. You remember that, right? And there was a witness, and now I remember watching this on a daily basis. There was a witness named Patrick Knowlton. He was a crime scene witness of the death of Vince Foster. He was the first person at Fort Marcy Park who found Vince Foster's body. Yeah. And Ambrose Evans Pritchard posted the article, My Sinister Battle with Brett Kavanaugh. He says, few people are aware that the prosecutor handling the death investigation of Vince Foster, Miguel Rodriguez, resigned from the Star investigation after a bitter dispute. His resignation letter, later leaked to the press, said he was prevented from pursuing investigative leads. FBI witness statements did not reflect what witnesses had said, that the suicide verdict was premature and that his grand jury probe was shut down just as he was beginning to uncover evidence. I remember this happening. The nub of the dispute, says Pritchard, was over the compelling evidence of a wound in Vince Foster's neck, which contradicted the official version that Foster shot himself in the mouth, which was always ridiculous. The key crime scene photos had vanished, and the FBI lab said that the other photos were overexposed and just useless, and they just simply weren't. Well, Brett Kavanaugh, his reaction to the suspicion that Vince Foster's death was not a suicide and to the findings of some of his other colleagues can be found in the stash of released documents from the Ken Starr inquiry. One says in Brett Kavanaugh's handwritten notes, these were handwritten contemporaneous notes by Brett Kavanaugh, said, quote, startling discovery, blew up portions of photo, trauma to the neck on the right side, appears to be a bullet hole. That's what Brett Kavanaugh wrote with his own hand. Pritchard says that Mr. Kavanaugh faced a choice because what happened was, as soon as the Ken Starr investigation realized that it was quite possible that Hillary Clinton and her minions had covered up a murder, well, there was a crisis. They decided there was no way they were going to accuse the president or the first lady of covering up a murder, and they immediately started to bury anything that suggested that Vince Foster's death was anything but a suicide. And Pritchard writes that Mr. Kavanaugh faced a choice, and he chose to go with the establishment rather than stick up for his colleagues, and this proved good for his career. You see, some of the people around Brett Kavanaugh, including Miguel Rodriguez, wanted the investigation opened, and they wanted to find the evidence and find out what had happened to Vince Foster. Ken Starr and the people at the top of the investigation said, no way, we are not going to even approach the subject of accusing the president or the first lady or anyone in the executive branch of something so heinous as to cover up a murder. Well, Mr. Kavanaugh chose to go with the establishment. And Pritchard says it was very good for his career. Mr. Kavanaugh went on to write the Star report on Vince Foster's death, but the original witness who found the body, Mr. Knowlton, got in the last word. He filed a report, and he managed to, it was attached at the end of the Ken Starr report. The summary asserts that the FBI had concealed the true facts, that there had been witness tampering, and the report had willfully ignored facts, and there you have it. So here's the thing, folks. Brett Kavanaugh is a tool of the establishment. The only reason that pro-abort, pro-homosexual socialist Susan Collins voted for him is because she knows he's a tool of the establishment, and he'll never overturn anything that has anything to do with Roe versus Wade. And that is the last word on Brett Kavanaugh. Sick, disgusting, and sad. You know, as I watched it, it was like watching the Russian front. I couldn't root for either side. And you almost, by default, you want to root against Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and then all of the liars and thieves and murderers who were making up all these heinous, incredible lies and the ridiculous lies that were flying around that Senate chamber. You want, by default, to root against those people. And I did root against them and all of that, but I do not root for Brett Kavanaugh. He's a shameful tool of the establishment, and all of you conservatives have been bamboozled again. As the devil's got to be the happiest guy in the room when the conservatives are standing up and cheering for Susan Collins and Brett Kavanaugh. Two of the biggest establishment tools and liars and child killers ever. It's just a shame. Is this what great again means? All right. That's it. I'm done with Brett Kavanaugh. Get out of here. I am your host, and speaking of the Russian front, we're going to... Wait a minute. I can't go to Whole Foods yet. I can't take on Whole Foods. Whole Foods versus the vegans. I mean, when you see that headline, how do you not click through on that? But we'll get to that in a moment. First, I have an update, because I covered a story a few weeks ago, and I told you people that I would find out what was going on. And that was the story of Lieutenant Colonel Maines, a United States Marine Corps combat Lieutenant Colonel, relieved the command while on deployment in the Middle East. So I've been doing my research. I went on Marine Corps chat rooms where Marines were discussing this at the time, by the way. I didn't realize that he had actually been relieved back in May of this year. The story only broke in late August, early September when I covered it. But it actually occurred back in May. And Jarhead chat rooms were all talking about it, and I got a lot of good information. First of all, I found out that a battalion commander being relieved while on deployment is unheard of, unless he was caught in some criminal activity or some gross dereliction of duty. You remember that Lieutenant Colonel Maines had used the word faggot one way or another, and that's what they say got him relieved. And well, I believe it was what got him relieved. I wanted to find out who exactly relieved him of duty is what I wanted to find out. Turns out, he was relieved by one Brigadier General Francis Donovan. Yep, and he's a politically correct Barry Ho era general, as I suspected he might be. He participated, by the way, Francis Donovan participated in the railroading and dismissal of one Captain James Clement. Captain James Clement was a radio operator on patrol with a group of snipers who urinated on some dead terrorists. And that cost Mr. Clement his career when his case was reviewed. They urinated on dead terrorists. Yeah, it's a little bit out of line. Snipers are generally a little bit out of line. The case also talked about how the snipers didn't shave and they didn't blouse their boots properly. They didn't blouse their pants. They didn't spit shine their boots while laying in the dirt for 6 hours waiting for Abdul to stick his head up before they blew it off. And they blew a bunch of them off, by the way. And then they did urinate, and they should have been disciplined. And they were disciplined. But Captain James Clement should have not lost his career over it, and Brigadier General Francis Donovan is the worst sort of establishment tool, who, by the way, has just been elevated to a position in the Pentagon by the Trump administration. So is this what great again means? We keep promoting Barry Ho era holdovers? Pathetic. All right, now on to the Russian front, where Whole Foods... Whole Foods is in a battle with the vegans up in Berkeley, California. You just can't make this up. The vegans hung a banner outside of Whole Foods up in Berkeley for a week, a black banner that said Occupy Whole Foods. But they didn't actually occupy Whole Foods. because they wanted to, but Whole Foods took out a restraining order against them. The animal rights activist organization, Direct Action Everywhere, that's their name. They wanted to go in and actually physically occupy the Whole Foods and stop them from murdering animals and serving their flesh. But the Berkeley store filed a restraining order against the vegans. And the vegans say without access to the inside of the store, it was harder for the demonstrators to get anyone's attention. Because they just look like a bunch of bums. A bunch of disheveled, filthy, long-haired, dope-smoking bums laying around across the street and on the sidewalk in Berkeley, which is fairly common. Nobody reads their signs. They assume they were asking for money. Anything helps. God bless. Anyway, there was a tense standoff between the vegans who say they advocate for total animal liberation. A tense standoff between the vegans and the organic food, organic in quotation marks, by the way. The organic foods giant, Whole Foods. Let's see here. Direct Action Everywhere wants to make Berkeley, California, the first city to ban the sale of meat. And they've been harassing butchers there regularly. And for whatever reason, they moved away from the small mom-and-pop shop butcher shops up to Whole Foods, probably because the mom-and-pop butchers made a credible threat of violence against the... No, certainly not. I wouldn't want to impugn the any mom-and-pop butchers. Anyway, so there you go, from the Russian front, Whole Foods versus the vegans. That's a riot. And now let's go on into the science file. And we'll talk about wind power. Yeah. There's two new papers published in the journal Environmental Research Letters and Joule, two separate journals. Harvard researchers find that wind or solar, either way you go, would require 5 to 20 times more land than previously thought. So all of the hippies... And the bamboozlers and the thieves who've been stealing tax money to fund their renewable energy projects, they've been funding research that has vastly underestimated the scale that we would need of wind and solar farms in order to produce energy, or at least enough energy to make it worthwhile. And they say that in order for wind farms to be productive, they would have to be so large that they would actually raise average surface temperatures on the surface of the planet. So basically, if you actually do the math, wind farms could cause global warming. Oh, it's possible, right? Funny. Anyway, they say wind beats coal, but it depends on how you look at it. I mean, they don't beat coal in any sense of energy efficiency or physics or anything like that. But a professor of applied physics at Harvard says, quote, "We must quickly transition away from fossil fuels to stop carbon emissions and the impacts of environmental impact, of social and environmental impacts have to be stopped." He doesn't really go on to clarify exactly why that is. That's just what that's what professors of applied physics at Harvard have to say in order to maintain their no-show jobs and get their paychecks. So researchers say for wind, they found that the average power density was up to 100 times lower than estimates made by leading energy experts, experts being in quotation marks again. And so let me tell you folks something. If these researchers at Harvard say that the power density is 100 times lower, you can bet that it's at least 1,000 times lower. If further research will explain it, trust me. And these leading energy experts, they're just leading on how to produce papers that produce the results that lead to the government grants that you end up with. I can't remember the name of the company that Barry Ho funded that went out of Solyndra. You remember that one? Yeah, right. Anyway, the researchers also say that previous experts failed to consider the turbine-atmosphere interaction. We go to wind now. Once wind farms are more than 5 to 10 kilometers deep, interactions have major impact on the power density. Average power density is 10 times higher than wind power. I'm sorry, average for solar now, average power density is 10 times higher than wind, but is also much lower than estimates by leading energy experts. Uh-huh, right. So after we already bought the bill of goods, after we already spent the billions of dollars wasted into bankrupt companies, we find out that the science itself was just all made up. Yeah, there you go. So wind, solar, it's all... You have to cover the surface of the earth with these panels. By the way, they're going up around our property here out on the prairie. We've got these little solar farms going up. They're hideous, awful, just horrible to look at, and incredibly inefficient. Who's going to clean? Who's going to wipe off? Have you ever seen? Okay, so we have a weather station here at the McBurney compound that's out in our backyard. And it's been out there for about 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And the solar panel on it, you can't even see it anymore. It's all corroded and white. So it's just a matter of time before that thing doesn't work. Who's going to go out there and scrub these solar panels clean? Anyways. So wind and solar are, well, there you go. And that's from the real science files. At least there's some real science. Now on to Austin, Texas, where, well... Austin, Texas is not really a part of Texas. And I can make that perfectly clear right now because the student council there in Austin has voted to, they've passed a resolution that restaurants can no longer throw away food. Starting last week, Austin restaurants can no longer throw away extra food in the garbage. The city hopes to donate the extra food. They're going to give it to the bums. I thought that's what throwing it in the dumpster does. The bums already have, there's already a pecking order for the extra food. The bums line up behind the restaurants, and they pick all the best stuff off the top. And then, you know, the better class of bum you are, the stronger bum you are, the better the food you get. The weaker the bum you are, you get the not so great stuff. Well, the city of Austin hopes that businesses donate the extra food, give it to local farms, or compost it. And they hope that they want to reach zero waste by 2040. That's their goal, zero waste. Now, I think composting the food is a fine solution if the business owners want to do it. You know, what the student council doesn't understand is how much manpower it takes to start sorting garbage. And you reach a point of diminishing returns, economic diminishing returns. It's more efficient and clean to just throw it away. But liberals feel guilty about their prosperity because they generally don't deserve it. They're slackers. And they know it deep in their dark little hearts that they're slackers. And they feel terrible about the fact that at the end of a meal, they throw away some extra food. And I can't psychoanalyze these people. I can just tell you what they're up to. A 2015 study showed that 30% of material sent to landfills from businesses was organic and could have been donated or composted. Well, good. Start a business donating or composting it. Don't force business owners to pay for it, you pile of slacking hippies. You know how hard it is to run a restaurant? You're up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're praying everybody doesn't steal everything from you that day. And you go to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning. And now you want me to start composting and sorting my garbage? Give me a break. The ordinance in Austin requires business owners to educate employees. Or one could say re-educate employees. And submit an online organic diversion plan each year. So who's going to write that? I guess the restaurant owner is going to write that at 3:15 in the morning before he heads off to work. Now, the city of Austin, though, don't worry, Mr. Restaurant Owner. The city is offering guidance and training that you can attend in all your spare time. They can help you. And the city of Austin released a statement saying the city is committed to helping companies. Really? You're committed to helping companies? And Sam Anguri is the interim director of the Austin Resource Recovery, and he says that the city of Austin is committed to helping companies. That's Sam Anguri, probably the misfit brother-in-law or cousin of some high Austin official who needed to find a job for his misfit relative. We care a lot. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back as we go further into the hippie madness of Austin, Texas. From the decline and fall file, seniors at Austin High School will be participating in a new gender-neutral homecoming. Gender-neutral, I said. Yes, senior Cecilia McBride and her girlfriend, Story, were nominated by their delusional classmates to the homecoming court. And when McBride, Cecilia, requested to be considered to be the king rather than the queen, administrators said that wasn't allowed. And of course, then the firestorm. And I'm sure as the words left the administrator's mouth, he or she knew that this was trouble. To say that you're not allowed to identify as a boy, well, he should have known, for crying out loud. Well, so the lesbian said, I'm sorry, not the lesbians. The administrators at the school told the lesbians that it has to be a king and a queen. That's the way we've done it here for 150 years. So the freaks protested, of course, to the principal, Amy, who quickly capitulated and developed a plan for a more inclusive homecoming court, as you can well imagine. This is reason number 1,161 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. They may be asked to participate in a gender-neutral event of some sort. That's all. So Principal Amy developed a plan, and then the pair of dykes said, we were in tears. I was furious. Furious? Really? I mean, could you maybe check yourself? This makes you furious that they tell you you can't be the homecoming queen? I'm sorry, king. You could be the homecoming queen. But no, you have to be the king. And when they told you you can't, the lesbian gets furious. Furious? Okay. Well, she obviously scared Principal Amy into writing up a plan. Well, now, under Amy's new plan, students with the highest vote total will be announced as part of homecoming royalty, regardless of their gender. It doesn't matter. And let's see. Catherine Gonzalez, who is the program director for Out Youth, who's for some reason allowed to comment on the story, probably because she's allowed in the school. She says, to accommodate where we're at now is the right move. To accommodate, to make the change, to step back, evaluate policy, and change it. She says, I think everyone deserves an equal experience, says Dyke. What's her name? Catherine over at Out Youth. Everyone deserves an equal experience. And that's the hallmark of a socialist who wants everyone to be equally miserable and to equally imbibe the Kool-Aid that gender doesn't matter or exist. Everyone must equally agree that boys and girls are all the same and that gender is just a fluid construct. And if you don't equally drink that Kool-Aid, Out Youth and the dykes, and they're all going to be furious. Yeah. And they're going to protest. Well, not everyone agrees, as you can well imagine. And here's where the real problem is. Texas Values, an organization whose mission is to preserve and advance faith, family, and freedom in Texas, had this to say about the gender-neutral pile of dykes and queers and freaks at Austin High School. They said, quote, "It's sad that a long-held tradition has been dethroned for the sake of political correctness." That's the milquetoast reply of our side on the right. Hey, Texas Values, this isn't just a bow to political correctness. No. Is that all you think this is, really? Just political correctness? This is the overthrow of civilization itself. This is the death of a nation. You should stand up and be furious for crying out loud. But no, it's just for this. You know, we can't just attribute insanity and self-destruction to political correctness. It's gone far beyond that. All right, but there you have it. And this is why Austin, Texas is sunk in the mire, is because even the conservatives there are afraid of their own shadow. And they can't stand up and say, these people are crazy. This is child abuse to allow this in our schools. These people should be arrested for crying out loud. The principal who drew up a plan to say anybody can be the king and the queen, she should be fired. She's nuts. But no, you can't say that. This is just another incident of political correctness. Move along, nothing to see here. The nation will be destroyed inside of a generation, but it's just, what can you do? It's political correctness. Meanwhile, Ted Cruz, a lawyer who I never heard of, is promoting a bill with Marco Rubio designed to harden schools against potential terrorist attacks. Yes. The legislation, I love this. It's as if we've fallen backwards into a George Orwell novel. The legislation is named the School Security Enhancement Act, and it will enable schools to access the Student Support and Academic Enrichment Grants for schools. Yes, it's Student Support and Academic Enrichment Grants that are available from the federal government that Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio want to use to, like, wrap the schools in concrete and barbed wire. Keep the terrorists out. They want to install bulletproof doors, metal detectors, infrastructure to, listen to this, infrastructure to provide cover and concealment. Now, do you think that's what the legislators who are stealing our money were thinking about when they instituted the Student Support and Academic Enrichment Grants? Was it infrastructure to provide cover and concealment? I mean, those are terms that I learned about in boot camp. That was preparing for combat. Now it's common vernacular amongst the high school students, cover and concealment. Let's see, Marco Rubio says, "I'm proud to join Senator Cruz." I'm sure you are. "He's for hiring more security officers. He's steadfast in supporting measures that keep our schools safe and prevent tragedy." You know what, Marco Rubio? Your political career is a tragedy, and I wish it could have been prevented somehow. Ted Cruz chimed in, "All of us have been horrified by the violent attacks. We need more armed police officers. We need to hire more school safety officers. Keep our children safe." By the way, speaking of George Orwell, Cruz and Rubio's new proposition is a follow-up to the Stop School Violence Act that was passed by Congress back in May. Apparently that didn't work. Despite the title, the Stop School Violence Act. I passed it, and now I want cover and concealment. That's what we need. That'll help. So the Stop School Violence Act apparently failed to live up to its Orwellian title, and now we've got the Cover and Concealment Act. What do they call it? The School Security Enhancement Act, offering access to federal student support and academic enrichment grants to provide for cover and concealment. So that when the bullets start flying, your kid has somewhere to hide. Reason number 1,162 to keep or get your children out of the government schools, they have to learn about cover and concealment. I've got a problem with that. Here at the McBurney compound, our daughters have not had to learn about frontal enfilades or grazing fire, cover and concealment, or anything like that, at least not yet. All right, now, so we've had enough fun with the wackos and the liberals and the Orwellian kook burgers up in Washington, D.C. Let's go to Chicago where things are serious. Speaking of cover and concealment, a 54-year-old Chicago police officer took her own life 2 weeks ago. And she worked at the same police station where two other officers killed themselves nearly 2 months ago. Officer Brandon Krueger, 37, fatally shot himself in his squad car July 8th. 2 days before, Officer Vanita Williams, 47, found unconscious at the station, died at a nearby hospital, suicide. An on-duty Chicago police officer took his own life September 3rd with a self-inflicted gunshot. A Joliet officer in his 12th year on the force killed himself on September 4th. Officer Daniel Rupp died from a gunshot wound to the head. Anyway, it's serious in Chicago. I mean, it's a war zone. And the police are under such enormous amounts of stress as the politicians, the legislators, the lawyers, and the judges have all decided to tolerate what really is a war in the streets. They've decided to tolerate it, and the police, they can't take it to the point where they're killing themselves. And there's another problem, is that most of these police officers, they don't have the mental health underpinning of Christianity. And so if you don't have a faith, if you don't have faith in Jesus Christ underpinning your mental health, you could lose it. And then you're thrown into a war zone. And more and more of them end up killing themselves. And it's just very sad, and it's a statement on the state of domestic tranquility in Chicago at the very least, and the state of mental health amongst law enforcement, and the tremendous burden that law enforcement has been put under, and the fact that we're now two and three generations away from faith and a relationship with God. Anyway, I don't know what else I want to say about that. I thought that was worth making you aware of how serious things are. Speaking of serious, I don't know how serious this is. This frog in my throat is pretty serious. So I hit the cough button and coughed. Story out from the Telegraph in London. A new study says that loneliness is felt most intensely by young people. That's according to a survey of 55,000 people. I find it amusing that you had to do a survey to note, to establish that young people feel loneliness more intensely than older people. I thought that was always fairly obvious. 16 to 24-year-olds, according to this survey, experience loneliness more often than any other age group. You know why? That's because they're still young enough to care deeply for the company of other people. Don't worry, kids. As you get older and you meet more and more people in this world, you'll lose that sense of longing to have relationships with them. Okay? Yeah. I mean, there's a few you'll want to be around. Right? There's a few, but please, just hang in there for a little while. You'll be disappointed and screwed over by so many people before too long that you'll want to just hide out and just get away. No, I'm using a bit of hyperbole there, but only a bit. Only a bit. I think if you can count your true friends on two hands, then you're doing pretty good in life. And you are one with the cause. That helps. I'm getting a little depressed at that last story. That's always helpful. That solo can pick anyone up. Anyone. Now, but from there, we have to go and descend back into the decline and fall file where ABC has a new drama called A Million Little Things. Have you watched this? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Yeah, right. Well, I don't even think we have ABC on our whatever we have there. Well, on ABC's new drama, A Million Little Things, Danny, played by an 11-year-old character, Danny, is struggling with the realization that he's gay. And he blames himself for his father's suicide. No wonder kids are having a hard time, for crying out loud. Anyway, Breitbart reports that Danny has decided he is gay. And a family friend who calls himself Uncle Gary not only knows about it, but celebrates the boy's feelings. Uncle Gary. All right, that hits a little too close to home, I think. In one scene, Uncle Gary asks Danny if there's anyone at school he's attracted to, at which point, someone should be arrested! Unbelievable. This is on network television, for crying out loud, the decline and fall file. ABC. The FBI should kick their door in and drag them out of there in handcuffs with a raincoat over their heads. All right. Now, one of the reasons things like that are happening on ABC is because of people like this. Bradley Manning. Bradley Manning, who calls himself Chelsea and is for some reason taken seriously, told an audience in the United Kingdom last week that life in the United States is just like being in prison. Oh. Yes, he spoke before an audience gathered at the Royal Institute in London. And he made the statement that, living in America is just like serving time in prison. Oh. And there at the Royal Institute, no one seemed to see the irony that Chelsea Manning was saying whatever he wanted, wherever he wanted, and identifying as any gender he wanted, and saying that his life was like being in prison while he was in England, for crying out loud. Manning, by the way, Bradley Manning, is a transgendered freak of nature, convicted in 2003 of leaking classified documents to WikiLeaks. President Barack Obama commuted his sentence shortly before he left office, and they probably hung out afterwards. Not to imply anything about Barry Ho, but there you go. So Chelsea Manning living in his own prison that he's created in his own mind. Still on suicide watch, by the way. We never did start that pool because we thought it would be in bad taste to have a Bradley Manning suicide pool where everybody picks a month. And then if you pick the month and the year, you win the grand prize. All right, let's leave Bradley Manning aside. And let's go to... China is developing a Death Star. Yeah, they've got a satellite with a laser for anti-submarine warfare, a laser that could be able to pinpoint the target as far as 500 meters below the surface of the water. China says that, yes, their laser could be used to destroy submarines and other naval craft, but it could also be used to collect data on the world's oceans. So which do you think it'll be used for? Yeah. Anyway, so there you have that from the war file. And then we go to the domestic tranquility file to Allentown, Pennsylvania, where you may have seen some of the reportage earlier last week about the car explosion that killed three people. My first inkling, my first suspicion when I hear that a car blows up and three people are dead is that it's quite possible these were terrorists. And that they wanted to kill Americans, but that they were inept and they blew themselves up. But it wasn't terrorists. It was Americans. This was another family detonation in the most literal sense of the term in this case. Special agent in charge of the ATF in Philadelphia says that 26-year-old Jacob Schomoyer planted a homemade explosive device in his car and then killed himself, his 2-year-old son, Jonathan, and a friend of theirs, 66-year-old David Hallman. Police are calling it an intentional act. Schmoyer sent letters to his family members and to the Allentown Police Department, taking blame for the blast that killed himself, his son, and his friend. Police say that Mr. Schomeyer was very unhappy with his life, is all they're willing to say at this point. You see, there was a time when you were very unhappy with your life, and you would do things that were, you know, not the best thing. You know, you'd go hang out at the local bar until too late, and you'd drink too much. Go home, you wake up with a hangover, then you'd get over it and move on with your life. But no longer, now people kill themselves. And they kill other people. Now, I don't know what was going on in Mr. Schmoyer's life. We may or may not find out because there's so many people killing themselves and killing others that it's very hard to follow up on these stories. The CBS in Philadelphia, where I got the story, by the time the story comes out on what was going on here, there will have already been 4 other murder-suicides that they're reporting on. And so we may never know the full details until Judgment Day. Investigators say that Schmoyer acted alone and there's no threat to the public. I disagree. There is a threat to the public. There is an ongoing and continuing threat to the public in America today. God help us is all I can say, because only God can help when things have gotten this bad. All right, so I don't know if I want to do... here we go. Now, you people know how I feel about these handicapped parking spaces. All right. So listen to this. A lady, a 72-year-old Elaine Moore, she was on a trip to the market, and she was waiting for a handicapped spot. And she says another lady came screeching around the corner and drove right up in front. The 72-year-old woman pulled up gently to try to let this other driver know that she was there first. But 57-year-old Donna Rowe just pulled right in front of her and took her handicap spot. So first of all, if you're able to steal the handicap spot, are you really handicapped? Right? She wasn't in a wheelchair. She wasn't using hand controls. So my guess is that, I'll just leave that aside. So anyway, 57-year-old Donna Rowe bulls her way in and takes the spot from 72-year-old Elaine. And Elaine said, okay, I'm not going to argue with her. I'm going to let her take it. So she had to go wait for one of the other 50,000 handicap spots in front of the store. Fortunately, there's so many handicap spots, she didn't have to wait long. But then she went to go into the store, and the lady who stole her spot attacked her, hit her in the face and the head. It gave her a bloody lip and a black eye. Yeah, yeah. Another shopper at the store says she's not surprised. Another shopper at the store says, I come here every day, and I've had more people take my parking spots, but you have to ignore that, or they're going to start a fight with you. So, I mean, how many crippled people are there in Danvers, Connecticut, for crying out loud? Are there so many that there's all these violent fights over these parking spots? And if you're able to violently attack someone after stealing their handicapped spot, how handicapped can you be? If she was able to hit this woman in the face. All right. Anyway, the woman who stole the parking spot has been charged, I do believe. She's been charged with assault and battery, and I hope she gets the book thrown at her. All right. The woman who battered this other woman. So what does this mean? She has 83 adult arraignments. She's been arraigned 83 times in court. She apparently has a long record of being a violent maniac. And who knows how Who knows how exactly handicapped she actually is. All right, so let's go now. What do I want to do? Let's go to Syria. It will probably close with this in Syria. The past few weeks, the Syrian army has launched a major offensive against ISIS. I'm sure you've all been aware of this if you've been watching RT. There's no other place to get news on what's happening in Syria except for RT, and that's unfortunate. I don't even think RT should be allowed to broadcast in the country. I don't think that should be legal, but I'm actually kind of glad they do because at least you get some news. I watched a show on RT a couple of weeks ago about transgendered people who are admitting that what they did was a mistake and they're trying to go back. You'd never see that in the United States. You have to go to RT. Anyway, RT reports that actually I got the story from the national.ae. What is .ae? I think that's New Zealand or is that Australia? AE. Oh, from the United Arab Emirates. You have to go to get news. You can't get news from CBS, ABC, except about some high school and the rape and the beer and all that. That's all you hear. And now this week we'll hear about the screeching, screaming maniacs clawing at the doors of the Supreme Court as the police drag them off, making like Brett Kavanaugh is going to ruin their lives. It's just going to be a ridiculous show. Meanwhile, the Syrian army, the Russians, and the Iranians have launched a major offensive against ISIS in the region of Al-Safa. And they've been holding hostages in Al-Safa. They took hostages back on July 25th. They captured about 30 Druze. Not Jews, Druze, D-R-U-Z-E. Druze is, how could I say it? The Druze religion is an apostate form of Islam, if you can imagine that. The Muslims don't like the Druze because the Druze don't want to kill everybody. And that doesn't work in Islam. So what do the Islamists do? They kill the Druze because the Druze don't want to kill people for not being Islamic or Druze. It's just sad. So they captured about 30 Druze back on July 25th. In the Druze region of Sweda in southern Syria, nearly 250 people were killed during the attacks led by ISIS in one day, and the Druze were captured. Well, now, in a gruesome video posted on social media, two ISIS fighters shoot a 25-year-old woman in the back of the head as she kneels, and then one of the men makes a speech about his brothers in prison and if they're not freed. Well, they say that if the campaign against their Islamic brothers doesn't end and if their Islamic brothers are not freed from prison in the next 3 days, then the rest of the hostages will know the same fate as this apostate Druze woman, unquote. That's what these terrorists have to say. So folks, no matter who wins in Syria, they will be our enemy, no matter who wins. But for now, let's be clear that ISIS is the ultimate enemy who must be destroyed, killed, with the utmost prejudice. They must be pursued, captured, and killed. And my hope is that we can allow the Russians and the Syrians and the Iranians to destroy them without us forming some sort of unholy alliance with any of these people. I don't want to train any of them. I don't want to arm any of them. I don't want to have anything to do with any of them. And after ISIS has been destroyed and killed by whatever combination of these other heathens, then perhaps we can get on with the... to get on with some effort to restore some semblance of civilization to that part of the world. But I'm afraid we've probably got too much work to do here to really concern ourselves with the Druze in Syria. And so I'm no fan of the Russians, but I hope the Russians bomb these bastards back into the Stone Age and burn them all to a crisp. That's what I hope. All right, now I'm going to end with this then from the Sad Religion file. Let's go quickly. A handwritten letter from Albert Einstein about his thoughts on God has gone on sale, and it's valued at up to $1.5 million. Yeah. Here's what Einstein wrote about God. He wrote, quote, "The word of God is for me nothing but the expression of a product of human weakness. The Bible is a collection of venerable, but still rather primitive legends. No interpretation, no matter how subtle, can for me, Albert Einstein, change anything about this. And for me, the unadulterated Jewish religion is, like all other religions, an incarnation of primitive superstition." So he wrote that about a year before he met Jesus Christ. As he passed on to the others. It was written about a year before the legendary physicist met his maker in 1955. Now, yeah, I know you've probably heard the rumors from Christians about how Albert Einstein converted on his deathbed and that he actually believed in God. He said some nice things about God. But that's really just because the love of Jesus Christ compels many Christians to project their hope of salvation onto people they admire. I found this to be true. They say this about many, many famous people who've died. They say, well, on their deathbed, we think that he might have. Because it's one of the many activities that Christians participate in, projecting their hope for the salvation of others. It's one of the many little things that make Christians better people than non-Christians, that's all. It's certainly better than Albert Einstein. Even if they weren't as good at math, is what I meant to say. All right. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at American Right to Life and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.